The West Live. The West Live with Ben O'Shea.
It's a short sentence, but with so much power. My princess, where are you? That's what Cleo's mum wrote on Instagram yesterday, followed by the words, please come home to me. Her pain was utterly unimaginable. That same day, a 100-officer-strong task force was announced, led by a detective who's worked several of WA's most high-profile missing person cases, including Jared Ross and Hayley Dodd. Kristen Shorten is an investigative reporter who has dedicated years to looking into the disappearance and murder of Jared Ross and has reported on Cleo's disappearance too. And she joins me now. Good morning, Kristen.
Hi, Ben. How are you going?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Great to talk to you again. Can you take us through the timeline as we know it currently of Cleo's disappearance?
Yeah, sure can. So Cleo's family arrived at the campsite at the Blowholes at Point Quabba at about 6:30 p.m. last Friday, so just under a week ago. Now, that's about 75k north of Carnarvon by road, about 900k north of Perth. So for those not familiar with Australia or Western Australia, it's about halfway between Perth and Broome on the west coast of the country. Now, Cleo was with her seven-month-old sister, Isla, who was born in March, her mum, Ellie Smith, and her stepdad and mum's partner, Jake Glidden. Now, from what we know and from what Cleo's mum, Ellie, has said in her recorded TV interview on Tuesday, when they arrived at the campsite about 6:30, it was just before dark, they put the tent up and Ellie and Jake prepared some dinner for the girls and prepared everything that the girls would need before they went to bed. After eating, Cleo went to bed first at around 8 p.m. And that was, she was the first in the family to go to bed. That was shortly before baby sister Isla. And Ellie and Jake went to bed sometime later. I'm not sure exactly what time. What we know from Ellie's mum is that Cleo woke up at about 1:30 a.m., 1:35 a.m. asking for a drink of water. Ellie got up and got that for her. She also checked on baby Isla and then went back to bed. And apparently after having a drink of water, Cleo had just rolled back over and gone back to sleep herself. Heartbreakingly, that was the last time Ellie saw Cleo. Now, I believe that Isla was the first to wake up on Saturday morning, waking up for her bottle. So she'd obviously stirred, woken up Ellie and Jake. And this is about 6:30 in the morning. Ellie got up and the tent was a large tent with a couple of different sections. So two sort of bedrooms, I guess, separated by a divider. So Ellie said that when she got up, as she passed the divider on the way to Isla, she noticed that the tent was unzipped and wide open and her precious daughter Cleo was gone. Now, it was the family's first time camping in that new tent. Heartbreakingly, Ellie did say on Tuesday that, you know, when they bought it, they had sort of spitballed whether there'd be any issues or dangers with this new tent, and this was just something that they could have never foreseen. Ellie and Jake were sleeping on a blow-up mattress in one part of the tent. Cleo and Isla were sleeping in the other section. Isla was in a cot. Cleo was on the ground on a mattress close to, you know, a zipper door, unfortunately. So it's sort of the front of the tent, I think. And now the previously unthinkable scenario that someone unzipped that tent and scooped her up in the dead of night from so close to where her family was sleeping looks like the more probable scenario.
Well, certainly it looked like it was just a simple case of a missing child. That changed reasonably quickly, and now the investigation has evolved into an abduction. And now, you've had some experience investigating and reporting on these types of big police operations. In your experience, what steps do police take? What resources would they have at their disposal? And now this is a task force. How do you anticipate the news, the evidence gathering will go from here?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Like, from my observations and experience reporting on children disappearing before, I mean, most of the ones that I've reported on, like Daniel Morecambe and Jared Ross, they've been older children. Now, this is a four-year-old. In a sense, it's more urgent because sometimes with older children, police believe that they might have, run away or gone to a mate's place or something like that, whereas this is a very small, vulnerable little girl. So in a mysterious disappearance like this, my understanding is police always run both a search and rescue operation and a criminal investigation in parallel from the very beginning. I mean, I think they've learned from history and past mistakes that you do want to get that criminal investigation, in full swing straight away as well, because you can't the time is of the essence. You don't want to waste any time treating it as a missing person when in fact there could be a sinister element involved. So they, in this case, they immediately started searching for Cleo on Saturday after she was reported missing to police. But they searched for her in the event that she had wandered off and got lost or perhaps fallen into the water. But they did also immediately in parallel start an investigation in case, foul play was involved. So that would have involved cordoning off the scene for evidence in case a crime had been committed, interviewing the parents and those closest to Cleo to either implicate or eliminate them, locking down their stories and timeframes, interviewing other witnesses in the vicinity, gathering evidence and exhibits and putting roadblocks in place, so things like that. Also, in this case, especially involving a small vulnerable child, police have every resource at their disposal, and including, as we've seen yesterday now, $1 million reward for information. So there's been, from Saturday, after Cleo was reported missing, there's been an extensive air search, land and sea search, obviously so far failing to find any trace of her. But those searches have included police on horseback, forensics, homicide detectives, drone specialists, the SES volunteers that have been scouring the land, for hours since Cleo went missing. There's been local helicopter pilots and a marine search and rescue volunteers from fisheries also joining in. The Army's been assisting with a drone that can use a thermal camera to search day and night. And as we now know, international agencies, including the FBI and Interpol, are also on standby to help with the case.
Well, we know Detective Superintendent Rod Wild has now been appointed to the disappearance of Cleo. Are you pretty familiar with him? He's been involved in the case of Jared Ross, that cold case investigation, as well as the investigation into Hayley Dodd. What does it mean to have someone of his experience leading this investigation?
Well, I really think that kind of reflects how serious police are taking this investigation and the magnitude severity of what they're dealing with. I've interviewed Rod a handful of times in the last few years during the course of my work on Jared Ross, and he was really a pivotal figure in my documentary about the Jared Ross case, The Boy in the Blue Cap. Now, Detective Superintendent Wild, he's an extremely senior, experienced and dedicated officer. He's been a police officer for almost four decades. As you mentioned, he's leading Task Force Rhodia, which is the dedicated operation set up to find out what's happened to Cleo. Prior to that, most recently this year, Wild headed up Task Force Ravello, which was the major investigation launched last December to investigate the fatal shooting of former Rebels boss Nick Martin, and that investigation ultimately led to a man being charged with Martin's murder. But prior to heading up Ravello, Superintendent Wild for the last few years had overseen the reinvestigation of Jared Ross's murder, which is a 1997 abduction and murder, a cold case which still remains unsolved. So he's got decades of experience as a detective, and I think, he's an extremely professional, committed, dedicated detective. And with so much experience and perspective, Rod really keeps an open mind and is not someone to develop tunnel vision in a case like Cleo. So I think having someone with his magnitude of experience is a very positive move for WA Police.
You mentioned earlier that WA Police were having interactions with international police agencies like the FBI, also working with interstate police within Australia. What would be the nature of that communication, and what would that add to the investigation?
Well, one of the, great fears of police investigating this case is that the offender, if there was an offender involved in abducting Cleo, that they may have already taken her across the border. So I guess they want all police in other jurisdictions to be on standby and really everyone to just be really conscious and cognizant of the fact that this little girl's missing and she could have been spirited across the border in a vehicle. It's hard to imagine. I mean, from the blowholes to the Northern Territory, it's like a 28 hours straight drive without stopping. It's really hard to imagine that, an offender would have got that far, prior to everyone being on high alert. But, you can't rule it out. Anything's possible in this case, and especially as we saw in the West today, there are so many different kind of escape routes and tracks and dirt roads, and it's just like a labyrinth, across such a vast area in WA between the coast and the borders with the other states. So anything is possible, but they would want, every resource and everyone on total alert for any sign of little Cleo.
And now you've seen through your earlier reporting firsthand the grief of a family when a child has disappeared and there's no clue what happened. What do you think some of the emotions going through Cleo's family would be right now?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, from interviewing the parents of Daniel Morecambe and also the parents of Gerard Ross, I mean, they've spoken to me at length about the ongoing turmoil and torture that they've experienced. I mean, with Gerard's parents, they did talk at length about, you know, the guilt and the blame that they felt and constantly torturing themselves for years with the what if, you know, what if I hadn't sent Gerard out that morning, you know, should I have done this, should I have done that, what if, and you know, and I think that also be like you'd just be torturing yourself over your last interactions with your child, like, did I rouse on them? Was I kind? Was I loving? Did I tell them how much I love them? All of those things. And I mean, just as a mother with two similar age daughters to Ellie, you know, my children are very similar to Cleo and Isla's age. Like, I'd say they're just experiencing unimaginable fear and agony and are completely tormented over the possible scenarios of what's happened to their daughter. And as Ellie said herself during the recorded interview on Tuesday, they are terrified. They can't sleep. They feel helpless, powerless, out of control, and at a complete loss as to what they should do. And when I interviewed the Morecambes this week, and they, you know, they said that the parents would feel absolutely traumatized by what's happened. They'd be in shock. They'd be numb, perhaps blaming themselves, asking themselves, why didn't I check on her sooner or do this or that? But, you know, as Bruce Morecambe said to me in that interview, his strongest advice to Ellie and Jake would be, don't blame yourself. You know, just look after each other, be there for each other. And it's just pointless and a waste of energy blaming yourself, because this is something so unexpected and unforeseen and really unthinkable that nobody could have, you know, predicted or prevented.
Mm. Now, this is a tough thing to talk about because all of us are desperately trying to hold on to some hope in this tragic situation with Cleo Smith. But as we saw, and as you've reported on in the cases of Gerard Ross and Daniel Morecambe, you know, these cases can hit a dead end and then in time they become cold cases that police pick up years later. At what point do police in this investigation have to call it quits?
Well, I guess it depends what aspect you're referring to, but I don't think police ever give up in a case like this, especially involving a young, vulnerable child. I mean, you know, as you can see with Gerard Ross, it's been 24 years since he disappeared. Now, his body was found 2 weeks later, but police, you know, remain determined and committed to resolving that case. In the case of Cleo, though, where there is still hope that she's still alive, she could still be returned to her parents, I think that they're going to, you know, just use every resource and, you know, at their disposal until they find her, you know, one way or the other, because I think, you know, the difference is with Cleo, there's still hope. She could still be alive. There's no trace of her. You know, the silver lining is that, yeah, she could still be alive and come back to her mum and her dad and her family. So, you know, look, as the search for her nears the week mark, you know, the investigation into her disappearance, it's certainly entering a new phase. So police haven't given up on finding her alive, but they do concede that the land search for her wandering off is concluding, you know, given the time that's now passed and the extent of the search. If she had wandered off, she would have likely already been found. So, you know, while that phase of the search is wrapping up, certainly the criminal investigation will now only intensify. So, you know, the search for evidence and exhibits will continue, and police will now be searching the scene, but in a different way. It's now in a forensic way rather than for Cleo herself. So the hunt for physical clues, evidence and exhibits will now intensify, and, you know, I don't think they'll ever give up on finding Cleo.
Mm. And looking at the personnel involved, the $1 million reward, it is the absolute priority of WA Police, as it is for everybody in WA. We just hope and pray that we can get a result. Investigative reporter Kristen Shorten, thanks for joining me on The West Live.
Thanks for having me, Ben. Good luck.